Hello and welcome to another bonus edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Really got a treat for you today. We are doing a preview of the Texas A&M game today. And rather than interviewing another podcast site or a writer for a website, I'm bringing on a really good friend of mine, a longtime friend of mine. We started working together back in 98. And he is a hardcore Aggie fan. Has a great deal of respect for Alabama. You'll hear him talk about that. And I probably mentioned this on the show, but and I've probably mentioned it on this show before, but this is a buddy that every season during the game, one of my favorite sort of treats of the football season is we will exchange emails breaking down the upcoming Texas A&M game. And so with the bonus crew, now that we're doing this season, we're doing previews with sort of external guests. I thought this is a perfect opportunity to bring Chad on. And so I think you're going to really enjoy his insights. He is us, except for Texas A&M. He just doesn't do a podcast. He just talks to everybody about football and he loves it. And it's clear it comes across. The audio in a couple of spots, just a little word of warning, the audio in a couple of spots is a little hanky, and so it cuts out and cuts back in. It's only a couple spots. It's not too bad, so we preserve the audio because there's just too much good stuff in there. So without further ado, I'm going to pass it on to the show. Thanks. Roll Tide. Hey, folks, we have a super surprise. We've got a good buddy of mine, Chad King, on the line. And Chad, I just want to get us started. You know, there's a tradition that you started that I'm super grateful for. And as soon as Texas A&M joined the SEC, we worked together years ago. So you know where my loyalties fell. And as soon as you guys joined the conference, you sent me a pretty significant write-up, sort of introducing Texas A&M to the fan base. And then ever since then, every year when we would play, the week prior to the game, it became, you know, one of my favorite in-season traditions. You send me an email write-up of what to expect from your team, and I would do sort of a response back, probably not nearly as detailed, but provide you some good information from my perspective, from an Alabama perspective. And the theme was always, hey, the game's more fun when you kind of know a little bit about the opponent. And so maybe talk to us a little bit about that and start talking to us about A&M coming up on Saturday.
Absolutely. And first and foremost, I want to make a plea to all the Alabama fans to please come to College Station and come to the games. I don't know if people know this about A&M, but we're literally the largest school in the SEC. We're about 69,500 students now. So we either rank number one or number two in the country. So it has been for many years the single largest campus in the United States. And so it's a great place to come visit. It is truly a college town. I mean, the name College Station, they literally built it around the university. So it's a great feel. I'd love to invite all the Alabama fans to the games. Would love to see you guys come. So and absolutely love this rivalry of playing Alabama. I've always been a fan. I've mentioned today over the past years that I had a cousin play baseball for Alabama, I think 86, 87. And so I've always been an Alabama fan as well. So as far as the A&M game, basically with this year, we're a little disadvantaged. But first, just thank God we're having football, right? And,
yes.
And for 2020, that scared me. But a couple of things to look for on the offensive side. A&M is really a strong this year from the standpoint we're returning 15 starters. We should be very good all the way across the board. We are just in a spot where the quarterback is not a plus for us. And so we have a good athlete. He's a senior. And so he has some limitations. So the A&M team is a little bit limited in what he can do. So as a fan, I'll let you guys know a few things about A&M that you can watch for in the game. So Mond is a significantly slow starter. He improves statistically about 5% in accuracy each quarter, from the first quarter to second quarter through the fourth. And generally, he actually improves after he starts running. But for whatever reason, from a concept standpoint, Jimbo does not want him to run in the first half. So he has had in the past, he'll have some good scrambles and some good runs, but he generally waits until the second half before he does that. That's about the time that his game will improve. So he struggled a bit at the first. So what you're going to see is literally for game one, he was very off. The average completion was only 9 yards for the entire game, and only about 5 yards in the air. And so he really struggles with the deep ball. And so it makes it very difficult, particularly in the first quarter. So what you're going to see is from a scheme side, A&M is going to have to get him involved early on. They're going to have to get him going. A&M, I mean, you cannot beat a dynasty like Alabama without good quarterback play. That's just not the strongest part of our team right now. And so what we'll do is we'll probably do a lot of short passes. You're anticipating this. So when we play Alabama, when we play Georgia, when we play LSU, a couple of things to watch for if you're on the Alabama side is watch your safety depth. In the first half, you know that we're not going to beat you deep, more than likely. Now, for A&M to throw a wrinkle, for A&M to throw a surprise, we're going to have to do something there because what you will pretty much attack us with is you'll set your depth, and then your safeties are going to start coming up in the box, and you're going to be playing close because generally, as a rule, historically in the first half, we don't throw anything beyond 15 yards. We don't complete anything beyond 15 yards, and so you're going to keep it right in front of you. So that's something that you can watch for. It generally makes us a slow starter overall. If the other team knows, hey, they're not going beyond 15 yards, you've limited the field, and so for the first half, usually it's pretty much a dogfight for us. Where A&M will get going is when we can start moving the ball, is we're going to have both backs on the field at the same time. Spiller, 28, is your stronger back, right? He's not going to be the exciting guy. The guy to watch that's fun, and he has an Alabama connection, is number zero, Anaya Smith. So Anaya's brother, Maurice, was a defensive back at Alabama, a couple of years ago. But Anias is a special talent. He's a sophomore. I would kind of describe him a little bit like a Percy Waddle. Waddle, Jalen Waddle. Percy Waddle was his uncle who played at A&M. But he's a little bit more like Waddle in his ability to get open, his quickness and his cuts. We're playing at running back. And so his open field moves are pretty spectacular. He's a pretty special player. He's only a sophomore. He's really taken on a leadership role in the locker room. He's a fun player to watch. And so you'll see him. We will more than likely try to utilize his speed. We'll do, I would think, over and under will be at least 3 wheel routes with him. And we'll try to get him out on the edges.
Hey, Adam. I think we might see more than 3 wheel routes the way we covered them against Missouri. Missouri definitely had some success running the wheel routes. And I don't know that all Alabama fans need to know that he's related to Mo Smith. We really enjoyed Mo Smith until he transferred with Kirby. And that was a season, 2017, that late game against Clemson in the national title game, we sure could have used another corner. So, he might not want to advertise that. Let me ask you about Mond. You were talking about he warms up as the game goes on, and certainly as he runs. There's been some games, it seems like if we go back and look at the sack totals, and I'm not, picking on sacks necessarily, but the point is, we've hit him a lot. I think Tom and I counted up, maybe it was even last year, if you take the sacks, and those were a number, you take the hits that he took after releasing the ball, and then you take the runs where he gets tackled on the runs, we were up near 20 hits. And a quarterback, might play half a season without that many licks. So he seems to get better as he gets hit. The harder we beat the guy, he continues to get back up. And so for all of the reasons that he's frustrating, he's one tough
hombre. He's absolutely a warrior. He really is. And he is interesting. He is better the more he gets hit. His stats will go up. He will get more yardage in the fourth quarter. And he plays better after he's beaten up. And I'm not sure. I cannot explain it. But you'll literally see. I can forecast in the game. You'll look and his accuracy will be higher in the fourth quarter after he's hit and beat up. But he's very, very strong.
There's definitely been, games with A&M where, you know, let's get him off the field. The game's, you know, we think the game's in hand, and he just won't die, you know, figuratively. And so I've had a lot of respect for him in that regard. But, you know, I agree with you. He's inaccurate. He's not everything you want. He has promise of some of the things you want. So that'll be interesting. What's the backup quarterback situation look like? I think I can't remember the timing on Nick Starkle leaving, but there was another young player that I think is in the transfer portal. I think he has a cousin that's a lineman or something. Talk to me about how the backups look.
So the guy who transferred, he landed at fourth in the quarterback spot. And so kind of across the board, A&M has had a number of transfers and some opt-outs. And in all situations, they have been sort of veterans that have fallen, you know, on sort of on the slot of second team, possibly to third team. A&M has really – we're finally getting a lot of – we're getting more talent. We're not Alabama level talent, but we've improved that piece. But the kid who transferred, he's actually from the state of Alabama, and he's going to be able to be successful somewhere else, as well as with his cousin. The backup quarterback situation is kind of a mystery. Our first game didn't go as well as we planned it, so we were really planning to see the backup quarterbacks, but there are two. I think in Tuscaloosa on the road, I think we're more than likely would see the sophomore Zach Calzada. Again, hopefully we don't have to deploy a backup quarterback on that. Calzada is a kid out of Georgia who has an NFL arm, but, you know, maybe he's still trying to learn the playbook. The future quarterback for A&M, people believe, and again, you know, you have practice, you've got to earn that right, is number 13. His name is Haynes King. He is a top-notch high school quarterback, did very well in all the sort of the camp circuits, and it's considered to be probably maybe the future. Kind of a coach's son, can understand a Jimbo and operate a Jimbo intricate offense, and he has a 4.5 40 laser time. So he's got a very good deep ball touch. So there's a lot of promise around that. So we don't know who the backup quarterback will be. It's listed as an either or situation. But I would think that if we were to see that this Saturday on the road in Tuscaloosa, he'd probably go with the more experienced kid.
Okay. Well, talk to me about wide receiver. You're going to suit up for him Saturday,
right?
We're
going to have to. The interesting thing is A&M has two new toys on offense, and they did not unwrap those toys week one. So we landed a kid named Damon Demas. He's a freshman. He was considered nationally to be the next Julio Jones. So when Alabama recruited him, now he committed to A&M very early, but literally Alabama had him connect with Julio. And so he is a phenomenal talent. Unfortunately, he missed some meetings and learned a freshman lesson, and he didn't get to play Saturday. So I'm anxious to see him. He's number one. He's a tall kid. He's around 6'4 and a half, supposedly very fast. I suspect A&M will take a deep shot with him because he's very tall and very fast. If he gets into the game, I think it should be something interesting to watch. Now, from an A&M perspective, we're basically playing all new wide receivers. Basically, we were only to have one returning starter. Our leading receiver, Jamon Osman, opted out, about 9 days before the start of the season. So a little bit of a surprise, not exactly what you plan on it. So we've got a lot of young talent, and so we're going to have to see how they gel together with the quarterback. But it's not our – we have a lot of talent there. It's a lot of young, unproven talent. So there's some names you'll recognize. 18 is Cameron Brown. That's actually Larry Brown, who played for the Dallas Cowboys. That's his son. He's a starter. And then there's a guy named Musa Muhammad. You might recognize that name. A freshman. He also did not get to play week one, but we're expecting to see him this Saturday.
Is that Fisher holding back? Is he sandbagging
a
little bit?
I really don't know. We played a very tight wide receiver rotation that was abnormal. We only played four wide receivers the entire game against Vanderbilt. If you told me in SEC Division I college football you could play a whole game with only four wide receivers, I'm blown away by that.
Yeah. I'm thinking, you know, even if you're sandbagging, not throwing to some of the guys, you want to see them run routes. Even if you say don't look at them, but, you know, go out there and run the route. That's interesting. That's interesting. You guys always beat us over the head with your tight end too. So talk to us about the thumping we're about to get.
I really think that's a position that we have an advantage. So Jalen Weidemeyer last year was a freshman. He had a very good game against Alabama. He's certainly getting a lot of interest there. What was peculiar is he actually was supposed to be the number two wide receiver in that class. We had actually landed a kid named Baylor Cup, who's number one in the nation, but he, for the second year in a row, not been knocked out for the year, in 2 days. But Jalen Weidemeyer is a very good athlete, a big, strong body, real good hands. I expect that he'll have a big game. He has done well in the bigger games. And so he's a kid that seems to rise up to that competition. He played well against Alabama last year. He's going to be a heavy part of the game plan.
Is he going to, he's 6'5", 265. Is he the kind of guy that is going to line up, look to block, and then sort of spin out into a route, or is he going to run routes?
He's going to primarily run routes. Now he's going to have a little role of that. We'll play a blocking tight end, basically. Jimbo's going to run a lot of two tights, particularly against Alabama, just to help with keeping the pocket clean, right? And so in any sort of the running game, he really will want to pound the ball and establish a running game as much as he can, particularly in the first half. Remember, we don't pass well in the first half. So we're going to run two tights most of the time in the first half is what you can expect. Now, again, he may surprise us, but I don't think so. This is the look that you're going to see. So we'll have one. Weidemeyer's strength is not blocking. He's going to do a lot more route running.
We'll talk about the offensive line. We're proud of our offensive line returning four or five starters. Well, you guys are returning four or five starters too. Talk to us about how they're going to line up and what you're expecting from the big uglies up front.
So it's interesting. It is, you look at on paper, we're returning four starters, but the offensive line was probably our weakness last year. So it's an interesting way how you look at it. So okay, we've got experience coming back. Our strongest lineman is our left guard. Our left guard is a really good player. His name is Kenyon Green, very strong player. Where will Alabama attack A&M? On the edges, obviously. But our right guard and center, those are probably the two weaker spots. Historically, Alabama has done an excellent job of saying, here's the weak spot, we're attacking here. Mm-hmm. I expect that you will do a lot more inside rushes with your linebackers over right guard center. Historically, your defensive coordinators, even though there may have been change, there's been a pretty consistency in the fact that they are attacking our weak spot on the offensive line. And so I anticipate you will watch a lot of that. That's an area that you're going to try to exploit. We had a lot more success week one running to the left side over that left guard. And so I anticipate we'll keep it balanced, but I think we're going to have more success running to our left than we do to our right, just due to the really that strength of guard play.
All right. Christian Barrymore sort of was exploded on the scene for us last year, interior defensive lineman, able to create some havoc in the middle. He sat out last week with a lingering knee injury. So he's supposed to be back this week. One of the things, sort of the ingredients, right? Sometimes it's that last spice that really makes the dish, right? And I think our defensive front, our front seven, Christian Barrymore might be that ingredient. And if he has an opportunity there on the right side, that might be sort of the game within the game up front.
It'll be interesting. There's one other element I wanted to – maybe a potential surprise for A&M fans as much as Alabama fans that I'm anxious to see happen. I mentioned to you we had two toys that he did not unwrap that all A&M fans were expecting. Mm-hmm. One is the Demond Demas, a wide receiver, number one. In addition, there's a highly touted running back. He's very quick, he's elite speed. His name is Devon Achain. He's the number six. If he gets on the field, I'll be anxious. It won't be to block. I'll be very curious. In my head, I would try to get a Nia Smith and Devon Achain on the field running wheel routes, some short passes in the flats, and let their elite speed take over. We have not had that type of player lately. It's been some time before we've had that player. And so our team speed has been a weakness. That's something that we addressed this year in recruiting. And so I would be interested to see if we have saved that for you or not. It's at least something to watch for in A&M games in the future.
Well, I think, you know, if you look at our defense, I like the parts that we have in the secondary. They haven't gelled quite yet. And so I think there's matchup opportunities there in the secondary. You know, you mentioned passing, just another thing maybe to watch for. You mentioned, you know, passing maybe a little bit light up front early in the game. You know, we typically run a nickel defense. Saban still says we play regular, we play a 3-4, but, you know, you don't have to watch many games to recognize he bases out of a nickel. And so it might be interesting, you know, if the temptation is to walk up the safety, you know, do we just line up in a 3-4 to start the game? So that might be interesting. That would at least be a wrinkle to see, you know, to start the game. Everyone's expecting a nickel. If we come out in a 3-4, you know, what does that do? Gives us maybe a little more flexibility to rush up front and maybe test some of the pressure there on the offensive line. So I think that might be something else to watch for. You know, you want to say, hey, if mine's going to struggle early in the game, then let's take full advantage of that. How do we do that? Maybe coming out in the 3-4 is an opportunity there. So fun stuff to watch.
Absolutely.
For, right? So what? So talk to me about the defense. I've read a couple of articles, and you know the preseason. You know, I'm going to give hats off to some of the to the writers and some of the websites, and maybe I didn't select all the right ones, but I found all of the sites that I looked at that did position breakdowns. They did those in February and March. And so on one hand, hey, that's pretty dated content. On the other hand, I love the enthusiasm and getting out, planning for next season. I actually saw an article that was written in January of 2019 that said 2020 is the year to look for. So I think part of that, you know, 2020 has been a weird year. I think part of that's the defense, right? So talk to me about, Is it going to be a wrecking crew sighting, or are we still building?
No. This is the year we look good on defense. In fact, this is the first time I can say we truly have an SEC defensive line. So since we've joined the SEC, that has been the biggest change from the Big 12 to the SEC is the difference in defensive line, the quality and the depth of quality. The fact that you can run out a third team kid and there is no drop in play. A&M is finally there at this point. Our defense is going to be strong this year. It's pretty good top to bottom, and the gap between first the ones and twos has really closed quite a bit. On the defensive line, we have a special player that I have jokingly talked to people with. We finally have one of those Alabama defensive linemen. That's amazing. Number 8, DeMarvin Leal. He's actually going to be somebody for you just to watch and fun. And in fact, if you're rewatching games, I often focus on him. What did he do on each play? You will scheme around Leal in the sense that people don't leave him in one-on-one situations typically. We will actually move him. He's about 290. His primary position is strong side defensive end. He'll play at least 3 spots on the D-line in the course of a game. And he's very, very good. He's talented. He's got a really high motor, and he's going to make plays. He's the guy your offensive coordinator is probably scheming around the most. But on a defensive line, I'm really excited about that group. They're very strong. We had a guy with a little breakout game week one on the other side, as far as the weak side defensive end, number 2. He's a kid who came over from JUCO, was very raw, the redshirted him. Last year he got injured right off the bat, never has not played. He really made a lot of significant plays in week one. He's been the talk of camp. His number 2, his last name is Clemens. He's a very good player. There's a defensive tackle named Bobby Brown. It's a name that Alabama fans may remember from recruiting. He's from Texas, but he's a big kid, about 330. Really plugs a lot of the holes. Very good run stopper. A&M first and foremost, Mike Elko, the defensive coordinator, will scheme to stop the run. It will be at the peril of the passing game. He does not mind. His top priority is stopping the run as much as possible. So we've gotten a lot beefier around there on the line, and he's really going to scheme that way. the young kid to watch that I was really shocked by how much he played game one is, you know, he's number for me to watch. It was the first time to see him play. So he's a young guy to watch for the future. But the guy that's special is number eight. You'll enjoy watching him play.
No, he'll definitely be fun to watch. McKinley Jackson, he surprised us too. So
I know he did. Sorry about that. But it's a name you're familiar with. Both. I mean, so Bobby Brown, McKinley Jackson, those are guys that are Alabama type defensive linemen. They're guys that you evaluated very high as well as A&M. He's the real deal. He absolutely walked in and he said, "I'm a man." In what was our strongest position, a defensive tackle, I didn't expect him to play greater than 50% of the snaps.
No, I think it's going to. I think that's interesting. And he's, you know, you miss on guys in recruiting, and you know, they're still fun to watch. Yeah. You know, sometimes it's aggravating and annoying, but they're still fun to watch. And you know, there's part of you that roots for them differently, but you know, you still root for them. You know, so it's one of those deals. But you know, I think it'll be interesting, right? You talk about we're going to stop the run at the peril of the pass. I think that, you know, Alabama is, and I think that's a fair strategy, right? I think we might be in a position to take advantage of some of those shots down the field, but it'll be interesting to see what we do also. You know, we flex out a tight end a lot to identify the mic and thin out the box. We ran a number of screens last week against Missouri, and so the types of things to sort of redirect the defensive linemen might be interesting. You know, one thing that did surprise me against Missouri, and it's Missouri, I'm not comparing you guys to Missouri, but the strength of their defense was right in the middle. They were thick in defensive tackles, an All-America middle linebacker, two safeties that they were really, really proud of. And so the teeth of their defense was right up the middle. And I was surprised the degree to which in the first quarter, you know, think about scripted plays, we attacked the middle of their defense. And we had some success, and they knocked down some balls. But the fact that we did not scheme around their strength in our initial sort of scripted plays, I found that interesting. There might have been a little bit of prep for you guys, right? That we're going to come back. We know that you guys this week, we know that you guys are going to try to stop the run. And, you know, we're going to come out with a tenacity that says we're going to try to run it anyways. Obviously, we're going to do some other things, but that might be interesting to see how that first, you know, 5, 10, you know, 15 different plays that Alabama runs at the beginning, how we try to sort of counter or just mano a mano. So that's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, and I'll also tell you what's going to be interesting as well, just as schematically. A&M Elko does not do a lot of blitzes. Particularly, he does not generally send his linebacker. When he's blitzing, he's usually bringing a safety. He's bringing a defensive back into the box. And so it's a little different approach, but he really wants to focus on stopping the run. He generally will try to basically – they'll stay in lanes as much. It's not – I like more of the real exciting wild coming off the edges, pressure on the quarterback. That's not been Elko's style. He doesn't generate a lot of sacks. So I'll let you know that he wants pressure, but not necessarily – he doesn't – his Elko coach teams do not – are not your, you know, team leaders in sacks in your history books. He has a very strong defense, but we're not going to generate most likely a lot of pressure, even though he'll do it primarily with the four on the line. And when he's bringing somebody, it'll be selective, right? We're not going to not blitz. But expect to watch it come more from a safety than you'll see it coming in from a linebacker.
Okay. Well, Saban's mantra, and you know, we all like sacks, right? That's the headlines, right? But you know, Saban's mantra is affect the quarterback. And so however you do that, and you can do that in a lot of different ways, simply from a sack. And it sounds like Elko shares a theory or philosophy there. And so that'll certainly be, you know, kind of fun to watch. Talk about these linebackers. There's a couple upperclassmen. You know, a lot of tackle leaders, but then I think I did a recorrect that Hines, the second leading tackler last year, is sitting out the season. So what's the depth look like? I think your starters up front are really solid. What's the depth look like there at linebacker?
So what they didn't cover in the national news is that Hines had lost his spot. And so Hines has been beaten out. And so we had a situation where some of these guys that were starters before, if they were beaten out, they they've decided to opt out. The leading tackler and the guy that's probably going to walk away the game as the leading tackler is number one, Buddy Johnson. Now, I would tell you that Buddy is a good player, but not a spectacular player. The way this is schemed is your defensive line is going to get as much penetration, and then the linebacker's there to clean up. And that's very much – a lot of schemes are like that. It's very much the situation at A&M. So at the end of the day, Buddy will probably – Johnson will be the leading tackler. But you won't walk away from the game thinking, oh, he's spectacular. He'll make a couple of plays, but he won't change your life. But he's a very solid, good player. There's a guy that Hensford, number 33, we generally play with two linebackers at a time. And so Hensford will make a number of flash plays. He's actually a converted wide receiver. And so he's got good hands. He'll be the guy that will be covering your guys out of the backfield. And he will make a few flash plays. If we bring a linebacker, we're most likely bringing him as far as pressure. But both are solid. I generally feel that most teams do their best when they've got a little senior linebacker, when they've got an upperclassman there. They tend to take, they make less mistakes. And in a scheme where your job is to clean up and you make that one-on-one tackle, they generally are a lot more reliable. So I think they're going to be very solid this year. Now, behind them are some younger guys. You'll see Andre White. You'll see a couple of other guys. There's a lot of young talent there. They're just waiting to get playing time. But they basically litter our special teams at this point.
Okay, fantastic. We'll definitely have to watch out for that. 100% with you on the senior linebackers. We've got Dylan Moses back this year from injury, and it was one game, but it was a sight for sore eyes to see him flash last Saturday. And I've been, we've been playing him with so far this season. Last year we played Christian Harris at the linebacker spot, true freshman, and so he had some growing curves. I've been calling Moses the cheat code for Harris, that they're going to be able to line up and be comfortable and get the right direction instead of two freshmen looking at each other. I don't know what either of us are supposed to do. Christian's a year in the system, so obviously he's going to be improved there. And then Dylan certainly has some security. So I look forward to our linebacker play being much improved this year over last.
Good.
Talk to me about the secondary. You guys are down three starters. Is that 3 out of 5 or 3 out of 4?
No, I don't think that number is correct.
Okay.
So basically, the best player is our number 26, Damani Richardson. So he's a safety. He's a sophomore. I told you about him last year. He is absolutely the complete package as a safety. So I like paying attention to Pro Football Forecast as they rate all the different players. He was the highest rated safety in the SEC Week 1. So he had the top performance. He's very, very strong. But 26 is fun to watch. If you're in the, he's one again, as you rewatch a game, somebody to look out for, when you're in the stands, he's a lot of fun to watch as well. But 26 absolutely makes plays. He's a strong kid, very sure tackler, makes up a lot of ground. Maybe not the fastest kid, but he's absolutely going to be a top. He's going to have a very long football career, complete package.
I vouch for him. Last year, you did mention him, and I remember watching the game. That's Chad's guy. That's that safety Chad talked about. So I think this year another year of seasoning. He is going to be one to watch in the secondary. I'm with you.
He's very good. Now our other safety is interesting. I'm not a big fan of the player who over celebrates. If you do your job and make a play, let's not act like you won the SEC title off your tackle. But number 9 is going to be that guy. So what we're going to do to sell out the run is we're going to cheat the safety in the box a lot. 9 strength, he pursues extremely well. He will make a couple of plays in the backfield that look fantastic. But he is definitely a boomer bust guy. He particularly had a rough game against Alabama last year. But he's going to over pursue. He's going to make some misses, and then you're going to make big plays off of those. So number 9 had his best game last week. That's the best game I've seen him play. But O'Neal, he's quite the talker on the field. Sorry about that in advance. But he will absolutely make some plays, and then he's going to make some big misses. And so he's kind of an X factor. So if he plays really well, it's going to be fun to watch. If he doesn't,
okay,
strongest position. And so 26 is a stud. Nine, that spot. We are starting a true freshman at corner. His name is Jalen Jones. He's number 17. He's a five-star kid. He's a highly rated guy. But if you're starting a true freshman, your offensive coordinator is going, okay, I'll circle this one, right? And so I generally think you're going to see that. Historically, our defensive backs do not follow wide receivers. So you're going to scheme to move your receivers into those spots. I suspect you're going to pick on the true freshman. I would. So I think that you will. On the other side, we have a very tall defensive back, Miles Jones. He's number zero. I'm going to have to get used to that number this year. But he's a big defensive back. And then our slot, which, again, this does not match up well with Waddle at all. But our slot is a much bigger, stronger defensive back. He's not the guy that I would close my eyes and envision, hey, this is the guy I would like to cover Waddle, as far as the quickness. But he's a good player. I don't know that it's a good matchup for him this week.
Is he more safety than corner?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm not, right. I'm not sure. Again, we're going to do as much as we can in the box. We're going to do as much as we can to stop that. I just don't think this is not a good matchup for him this week. And that's a position he'll be. So how will we, I think out of, determination, we'll start him covering there, but I wouldn't be surprised if we have to make some adjustments during the course of the game.
Right. I have found that, like I said, we play a lot of nickel. You play who you have, right? You play your best, but I find we end up, the Alabama defense ends up being a little bit stronger, a little bit better when that nickel is a corner. So we've got three corners on the field as opposed to two, especially anymore, right? I find that. And we had a year, a couple of years ago, we took a corner and converted him to a safety. And I was ecstatic. We had four corner capable players on the field. And then a true strong safety. I thought, man, that is it. If you can feel that, that's a tough get. But I'm with you. I like having more corners out there, corner capables, than safeties. So so I'm gonna flip gears, just a little bit. We got just a couple of minutes. Talk to me about sort of the fan mindset for Jimbo Fisher. I didn't prep you for this one. I'm just throwing this. A little curveball at you. This is year three. You guys are still backing up trucks full of money for this guy. Hey, that's quite a deal that he was able to sign. What's the temperature in the room across the fan base on Jimbo?
So we're very positive. I'm always surprised that the media seems to try to stir something up and act like there's something there. The whole money issue is no issue really from an A&M standpoint. And again, that sounds terrible as you say that in your out loud voice, right? But A&M is very strong financially. So we rank one or two in the nation as far as the coffers being full. And so I think there's only like four schools that the athletic department could be self-sustaining. So from that standpoint, that gets a lot of writing in the press. That is not a concern from an A&M standpoint. The big concern is, we brought you here because we need you to cross over, and we need you to get into that rarefied air of an Alabama and an LSU, and let's start winning the SEC West. We're not here just to play. We don't want to finish third, and we certainly don't want to finish fourth in the West. We'd like to enter that top spot, just like everybody when you're competing.
Sure,
so
sure.
Now I'll tell you, we're like every SEC fan base. Week one didn't go very well for us, so we're in complete overreact mode, panic mode, and oh my, what are we going to do? The frustrations have to do with how. So Jimbo is a time of possession guy. So when we were really strong, right, with Manziel in 2012, we were very fast paced. We moved. Mond one of the things about him that's a little maddening is it takes forever to get a playoff. And so generally he's snapping the ball with less than 2 seconds left on the clock. Well, do you think your defensive linemen know, hey, we're about to snap it? It's not really a big surprise. And so your get off on the defense is pretty going to be well-timed in that situation. There's not a lot of mystery, but we take a long time. So the fan base is a little upset about, all right, we're ready to see maybe a different quarterback, not unlike you'd see other people at other schools at different points if you're just not getting better results. But from an overall standpoint, people are – the talent increase in what he has done from a program and how he has really shored up the depth of the talent is something that people can absolutely see. The toughness and the grit that he's instilled into the program is something that you can see. There are a number of things. We don't have the off-the-field issues going on. And for instance, he also said, look, part of this whole COVID thing is going to be leadership. We have A&M, I don't want to jinx this, but has not had a single COVID case. They've not had, you know, there are things he's done from a leadership standpoint. He's saying and doing all the right things. Now, the results might haven't been there, but he hasn't had all the horses. Now, this was the year supposed, you know, that we were looking for the talent to be there. But it's an odd year. We'll see how this works out. He's still a little limited on quarterback play. We were expecting him as the quote unquote quarterback whisperer to really take strides with Mon that we have not seen. But other than that, it's all positive there. I read more speculation in the media being worried about his contract than I ever hear from A&M fans.
So breaking news, the media is overreacting to
just a little bit, just slightly. So it's always interesting. You also have to realize you know a little bit about rivalry within the state. A&M does not, the media in the state of Texas is controlled by our tribal, the University of Texas, right? So they're a liberal arts school. A&M does not have a journalism program. So the writers didn't grow up A&M football fans.
Right.
So you have to realize that. So from a local perspective, you know, we're not controlling the news cycle on that piece. So the writers are building that up a lot more than it really is.
No, that's interesting. It's that inside perspective, right? Because, you know, you follow a program or you see a program from afar, that's what you get, right? And so it's interesting that you talk about really the leading indicators, the trouble off the field. You see the depth of the roster, you know, the second and third teamers start to look more like the first teamers. And when you start to stack up enough of those leading indicators, then the lags come, right? And then the lagging indicators, right? And so, and that's success on the field. So, the right quarterback can spur that along or slow it down. Maybe that, maybe that's a play, but yeah, it's good to hear that, you guys are pleased with what he's doing there, that there's still progress being made and to be made. So that's exciting.
Oh, definitely.
Take us out with any sort of closing thoughts, maybe predictions or expectations, things we didn't cover, that's sort of the question we didn't ask about Texas A&M.
A complete difference. Of course, Waddle having two returns for touchdowns, it's kind of a big indicator there. But Alabama has A&M's former special teams.
Yep.
A little bit of a dip, from a standpoint on that. Now, the kicking game was very strong, right? We historically have our punters always do very well. Our kickers are on the plus side. But we did not do as well against Alabama last year in the special teams. That was the first time I can remember in probably, 15 years where I walked off the field or walked out of the stadium and said, we got beat today on special teams and badly. And so I think that's going to be what I'm really interested to see, because that was something I was unaccustomed to seeing. And so I thought that was a strong positive for Alabama. You have historically made plays, right, on your special teams, but that has been an area A&M was proud of in the past. We absolutely got beat in that area last year. So I'm anxious to see how we respond and if our focus on there. So to me, I think that's going to be a critical component because I think in the beginning, I think both defenses are going to do a very good job stopping one another. And I think that you're going to see possibly some good movement as far as flipping the field on special teams. There's going to be some opportunities, and that's an aspect we haven't talked about that I'm really going to watch.
Well, Chad, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Like I said, we typically play this game a little later in the season, and so maybe the insights we've got a little more to build on. But this is some phenomenal stuff to help us lead us into the Texas A&M game. Really appreciate your time, spending some time with us, talking us through. You know, wish you guys luck next Saturday, but should be a good contest. Appreciate having you on.
All right. Hey, take care, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Fantastic.